This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Back in September, the Super NES Classic was released by Nintendo, and this device was and still is the hottest item heading into the holiday season. The Super NES Classic is a miniature version of the original SNES by Nintendo with 20 preloaded games. The device is currently sold out everywhere, and it's absolutely amazing how after 27 years, the Super Nintendo is still popular amongst its fans. But what is so special about this system? Co-founder of the National Video Game Museum, Sean Kelly, speaks about the Super NES history and why it's still popular 27 years later. Thanks for joining me, Sean.
Good to be here again.
You know, with the Super NES Classic coming out and like Prima did their own little book about the Super Nintendo, why is Super Nintendo so popular?
Super Nintendo was released in 1991, and it was one of the golden ages of gaming. You know, the competition between Nintendo and Sega for the 16-bit era of video games, I mean, it was great. Both of the systems were pretty similarly powered. They both had some great games, but Nintendo came off of their really successful original NES, and they had a lot of great properties like Zelda and Mario and a lot of other games that really kind of propelled the Super Nintendo into a whole new level. It was great. There was, like I said, the competition between Nintendo and Sega was pretty fierce, but it really spawned a lot of great games, great franchises, great creativity. Super Nintendo, definitely came out on the top as far as sales numbers are concerned. But there were just some great games on Super Nintendo that people remember really fondly.
One of the things I noticed in this Prima book was that they claimed that Nintendo single-handedly resurrected the industry from the great video game crash of the early 1980s. Is that true?
Yeah, honestly, I think that's giving them a little bit too much credit. But they definitely brought the industry back from a place where it was having a lot of trouble. I think a market crash in 1984, but I don't want to say that video games died. You know, they were pretty alive and well on computers. There were a bunch of different reasons that the video game industry crashed, but one of them was the computer industry. Computers are really starting to gain traction, and there were some great games on computers. There were no home consoles. So in 1984, no companies were making a home console. And in 1985, Nintendo, brought it back to life with their NES, and they had some things in the NES that reassured people's worries from the crash that weren't going to happen again. Their seal of approval on the game, so supposedly they tested all the games and made sure that they didn't suck, unlike some of the Atari games that were coming out towards the end. That kind of brought the industry or the home industry back. But I don't like some people give it a little bit too much credit as far as saying that they revived the industry. The industry was still going. It was just kind of, it was in hibernation. So, I like to say that Nintendo woke it up.
I like that. That's cute. It was in hibernation and Nintendo just was like, hey, guys, come on. We got to get going.
Yeah, let's go. We got to go. Come on. Time to wake up again. They were still there. They were still, it was funny because at that time, there were some great computer games, some really good computer games coming out, but the industry was kind of, woozy from the crash, and in 1985, Nintendo kind of brought it back. And, another thing that you could say about that is when the video game industry crashed in 1984, you lost a lot of the casual gamers. Most of the casual gamers were like, I'm done with this crap, but there was still a pretty good group of hardcore people that moved on to computers and started to play some really good games on the computer. And what Nintendo did was they brought Mario, and Mario is a really fun, simple, little game, and they brought the casual gamers back. They were gone for a year or so when the crash happened, but Nintendo kind of brought all of those people and more and actually turned a lot of those casual gamers into hardcore gamers with some of their great games. So it was interesting. It was really interesting. But to say that and I've read comments like that many times in different publications that they brought it back to life. It was still there. It was just, like I said, hibernating.
When it comes to Super NES, one of the things about it is that they had, like, these crazy accessories. They had, their own little mouse pad. Why don't they do that now?
It's kind of hard to do that now. They do still have... Yeah, the thing about Nintendo is they were innovating, and also the mouse and the Mario paint and they used a light gun, the Super Scope light gun, which was actually like this giant bazooka that you had to rest on your shoulder. There were a lot of different controllers, and I don't want to say that they don't do that. I mean, if you take a look at the Wii, the whole concept of the Wii was like complete innovation, something off the chain, something completely different than what we're used to. Now all of a sudden we're standing up and we're waving controllers around, and they didn't make a peripheral to do that. They made a whole system to kind of think outside of the box. They had some weird stuff back. In fact, there was some really weird stuff for the original Nintendo, but they had some weird stuff back in the day. But I think they kind of took it to the next level and kind of designed their system around some of the weird stuff that they had. So,
yeah, I just started realizing that Super NES had some really weird stuff. And it started because I went into my local Play and Trade and they had like this mouse Hyperkin. And I was like, what do you need a mouse for? And it's for the Super NES. Yeah. And I just thought of Mario Paint. I think that's the most famous one when it comes to like using the mouse. But there was a bunch of games that you had to use a mouse for. And like this whole new world opened up for me.
Yeah. Mouse was... It was interesting. The mouse is the Hyperkin mouse that you mentioned is actually something that just came out within the last year or so, because there were so many Super Mario Paint cartridges out there, but people couldn't find mice to use them with. So Hyperkin redesigned the mouse and came up with a third-party mouse. Even now, almost 30 years later, they came out with a replacement mouse because the actual Nintendo mice are getting kind of hard to find. And those Nintendo mice, they actually used a ball. I don't remember the mouse ball years and years ago, and all the mice had a ball instead of a laser, and Nintendo mice did that as well.
Oh, that's crazy. I forgot about
that.
Believe
it or not, Sega had one too. The Genesis had a mouse too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't even hear that one. Now I have to look into it. Well, when it comes to Super NES, I always remember that console being more for role-playing games like Earthbound and stuff like that. So I didn't even realize there's all kinds of weird platforming games on there too.
Great ones. Yeah, there were some. I mean, the Donkey Kong Country first appeared on Super Nintendo, and there were three different Donkey Kong Countries for Super Nintendo. They're incredibly popular, among the most popular games of all time for any system. And if you look at the Donkey Kong Country, still comes out today. There were a lot of really good RPG games, like the Final Fantasy series. The first Final Fantasy was on the regular Nintendo, but it didn't really go crazy until 2 and 3 came out on Super Nintendo, and Chrono Trigger, and like you say, Earthbound. There's some great games on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger, that was a great game. I still play that one.
It's a great game, and that's the thing about those RPGs is they're timeless. Even though the graphics may not be as good as some of the games today, you can always go back and play those games again, and you're kind of following a story as much as you are worried about the graphics. So you kind of forget, I could play something with better graphics. Those games are timeless.
Besides Donkey Kong, what other bestsellers were there for the Super NES?
Well, the Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past on Super Nintendo. A lot of people will say that is one of the best games ever made for any system. Period. Link to the Past on Super Nintendo. But of course, the Donkey Kong. There's a couple different Kirby games on Super Nintendo that are really fun. The Metroid. Metroid actually started on regular Nintendo, but Super Metroid again on Super Nintendo was really what kind of set Metroid off as a mainstay franchise. There were a ton of different RPGs, Secret of Mana, like we said, Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger. There are a ton of RPGs, and that's another interesting part of the Super Nintendo library is that you can go back, and there were a lot of RPGs that were released on Super Nintendo that weren't really popular when they first came out, but now people are going back and playing those games, and because, like I said, they're timeless, there's all sorts of more obscure games. I Had the Beholder was on Super Nintendo. Some of the more obscure games, RPGs, but people are going back now and playing them and still enjoying.
Now, the Super NES Classic, it comes with like 20 games or 21 games. Have you had a chance to play one yet? I haven't.
Yeah.
Oh, you have?
A little bit. They're kind of hard to find. A friend of mine got one, and we were playing with it a little bit. And it's great. You know, one of the biggest problems with the NES Classic was the length of the controller cords. It was just too short. But the Super NES version is a little bit longer on the controller cords. The games that are included in it, of course, play perfectly, just like the NES version. And the lineup of games that are in there, they gave you a pretty decent set of games on the SNES Classic. And they even came out with a game. The sequel to Star Fox. Star Fox 2 was apparently finished but never actually came out back in the day, and they put that Star Fox 2, I think they actually did some programming on it and had to finish it, and they included that on the SNES Classic as well.
When it comes to something like that, why do you think people would even buy that? Because I know, like, I was thinking to myself when this came out, I'm like, man, just get yourself a Super NES console. I mean, is there a con to that? Like, do Super NES consoles just not last that long?
Well, you know, believe it or not, one of the biggest problems with the Super NES console is the plastic. They did something with the plastic. I don't know what it was, to be honest. But the plastic over the years, it becomes really, really brittle on some of the earlier Super NES consoles. So even if the console still works, there are consoles that literally have, like, big hunks of plastic broken off, and you could, like, touch it and break the plastic. Whatever they did with the Super NES, it just the plastic kind of goes to hell over time. I like I said, I don't know exactly what the chemical problem was. Only on the earlier ones. The later ones, the plastic was made differently, and they're still fine. And the other thing about them is that they're collectible. So, you know, like, for example, if you were collecting baseball cards or something versus just want a little kid that just wants to play with them, the more collectors there are that are taking they're scooping up the systems that are keeping them in their collections, and I don't want to say not really using them, because they do, but the competition for what's still out there gets tighter and tighter. So if you want to go into a store and buy a Super Nintendo in good condition that's working, you could end up paying $80 just for the system. The games themselves are also really collectible. You know, some of the games that are on there, on that SNES Classic, they're worth a lot of money. In fact, I actually did the math the other day, and the cost, if you wanted to buy each individual game that's on the SNES Classic, it would cost you over $500 just for those cartridges to buy them in today's collectible market. Star Fox 2, you can't buy it all because it never came out, but all of the rest of the games that are on there, if you added up the value just walking into like a vintage game shop and buying those cartridges cost over $500. And some of them, you know, even if you wanted to buy them, you would have a hard enough time finding them. So, you know, so you get a decent collection of games, you get a system, you get two controllers, and you pay $80 and, you know, it's actually, price-wise, it's a pretty good bargain. And you get to play some of the most popular games. You get Super Mario World, and you get Super Mario World Part 2, and you got Zelda, and you get some of the most popular games. So if somebody that just wants to kind of relive some of their Super Nintendo fun and not build a big collection and not pay $1,000 for it, you know, it's a great deal, $80, and you get to play some great games.
Well, if you can find it for $80, because...
Yeah, well, that's another conversation. People are scalping those things on eBay. It's really frustrating.
When it comes to the console design, was the Japanese version better, or they're both having problems like the plastic?
The Japanese version isn't as bad as the American version as far as that yellowing and brittle plastic is concerned. You know, they styled them differently. I don't really know why they did that, though, to be honest. I kind of like the Japanese style a little bit better. It's kind of sleeker, kind of curved design. But for whatever reason, Nintendo decided that the American version needed to be different. I really don't understand it. I actually did a little bit of research trying to figure out if anybody knew. And my understanding is that nobody but Nintendo really knows why they did that. So.
Now, the yellowing of the plastic, I've noticed some of my cartridges do that, too. Is there any way to, like, stop that?
No, I don't believe there is. There are things that you can do. There's a process called RetroBrite. And if you go to YouTube, there's a dozen different videos that tell you how to do it, and you can change the color back to, the color it's supposed to be, but it doesn't help any of the brittleness. So, even though it'll look nicer, it's still actually pretty fragile. Oh, so yeah. It's something that they did with the plastic. I don't know if they were forced to for some environmental reason or if they were trying to cut costs or what it is, but something with the plastic, it just becomes really brittle over time. And the NES doesn't do, the original Nintendo doesn't do that, and then N64 doesn't do it. Just something with that very first run of Super Nintendo's that what's funny is that if you go into collectible or vintage game shops and you look at them, sometimes only the bottom half turned yellow and the top half didn't. So it was kind of like a crossover where they were still using some of the old parts, but as they were building those in-between systems, they were using bottoms that were produced newer or tops that were produced newer and bottoms that were produced older. It's really frustrating because you lose a lot of systems to those destroyed shells. It's really frustrating. In fact, there was a company, the same company Hyperkin that released the mouse, they were actually looking into at one point remanufacturing just the shell so people could put their systems into a nice, clean shell that wasn't going to crack, but that never came to be.
Yeah, I could see that. You want your console to look a little bit nicer, but it's
right?
Like, why not? You paid a lot of money for something that's original, and it's like, I want it to look pretty when it's sitting on the shelf.
Right. It's an shelf when people come over and you want to take it out, it looks like crap. I mean, who wouldn't want to, it? But I don't know. They maybe it ended up costing them too much, but they decided to get that. And then they did do the mouse instead, but I don't know.
Mm. In total, how many games did they make for the Super NES?
783. That one's easy. 783. There were 60-some games that were released only in Europe or something, but total worldwide is 783. There's some pretty tough ones to get.
Now, is the Super NES region-free or no?
Yes and no. You can fit, the difference is the style or the plastic shell. So the cartridges won't actually physically fit into, like the Japanese cartridges won't physically fit into the American cartridge slot. But if you were to take the little circuit board out of the plastic shell and chug and stick it into the cartridge slot without a shell, the game would play. The design and the plastic prevents you from sticking it in there.
Hmm. Okay. So does the Japanese version have the same problem, or our cartridges can fit perfectly fine into theirs?
No, it's the same problem. Physically, it won't fit.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's pretty neat to know. When it comes to the actual games itself, I was reading in the Prima game guide here. They were saying that some of the games have like different little chips in them, and I've opened up a couple of Super NES games before, but they all look the same to me. I mean, was that a big deal back in when this came out?
It was, at that time, you think about manufacturing those cartridges. Today, when you manufacture a CD game, it's a CD inside of the box, whether it's an Xbox 360 or Xbox One or PlayStation 4 or Nintendo Wii, it's just a plastic disc inside of there. But when they were manufacturing cartridge games, every chip that went on that cartridge added money to it. So one of the chips in particular on the Super Nintendo was the Super FX chip, which it added it's like a secondary graphics chip inside of each cartridge that gave those particular games a little bit more graphics power. They can do a little bit better graphics than the other one. But every cartridge that they manufactured, they had to stick one of those chips in that cartridge, and it added it added money. I was trying to remember this the other day, but I believe that those games just sold for the same price as all the other games. So even though Nintendo was still selling them for $60. Those games, they cost them extra money to produce because they all had that extra chip inside of the cartridge.
Oh, wow. So they were losing money on them then.
A little bit. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, they figured, well, this is going to sell us, X number more cartridges because people are going to, want to play this game. But as it turned out, there really weren't that many games that used that Super FX chip.
So officially, when was the Super NES retired?
It was retired in 2003. So 91 to 03 gave it, a support life cycle of 12 years. So, that it's still around today and it's still going. Most of them are still going. If it weren't for the plastic, most of them are still going, 30 years later. So that's not officially dead, so to speak. week, and I'm using air quotes around the word dead, but it's not dead, but as far as Nintendo is concerned, that in 2003 they didn't support it anymore.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I got myself a Hyperkin, one of the Retron 5s, is because I was so concerned about the cover of my Super NES. I'm like, I don't know if it's going to last much longer if I keep messing with it and shoving cartridges into it, you know?
Right. Is yours turning yellow like that?
Yeah, half and half. It was half and half.
Half and half.
Yeah,
right.
So the top half was yellow and the bottom half wasn't. And I remember when I bought it and I thought, like, was this... Did somebody just piece it together? Did I get a Frankenstein-esque Super NES?
No, there are some that just do that. The same thing with the cartridges. There are some cartridges where only one half turns yellow and the other half doesn't. It's just a manufacturing process.
Yeah, I've run into those cartridges now. Before, I went out of my way to make sure that the cartridge wasn't yellow, and now it's just like, I can't stop it.
There's only so much you can do, right?
Yeah. By the end of its run, do you know how many units of Super NES was sold?
About 50 million consoles. So we were talking earlier about the comparison between the Super NES and the Genesis. The Genesis only sold 30 million. But by comparison, PlayStation 2 sold 150 million. So it's 50 million is pretty sizable, but it, you know, by today's standards, PlayStation 2 actually tripled it. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no way. That's a huge amount, 150 million to 50 million. Like, geez.
Right? Triple. It's obscene. Unbelievable.
Yeah, poor Genesis. They've always been the runt of the litter for a long time.
Yeah, right. You know what else is interesting? Super NES was launched at $199 in the USA, and so was the NES, so was the Nintendo 64, and so was the GameCube. All of them were launched at $199. I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is cool. Too bad they didn't do that with the Switch.
No, such luck.
Well, thanks, Sean, for coming on. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to me. For those listening that are interested to know more about you, where can they go?
National Video Game Museum, Frisco, Texas. We're about 25 minutes north of Dallas. We have the largest collection of video game hardware, software, paperwork, memorabilia in the world, and you can see a lot of it 7 or 6 days a week in our museum in Frisco, Texas.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.